The Murthy law firm has been clarifying US immigration laws and procedures for foreign nationals since 1994. Teleconferences and podcasts were added to the resources available online in 2012. We are happy to offer this free service. Please listen to copyright information and restrictions at the end of this recording.
Welcome. I am Sheila Murthy, President and CEO of the Murthy Law Firm. Thank you so much for joining us for today's discussion about non-immigrant visa issues at U.S. consular posts. Joining me for today's panel discussion is our esteemed colleague, Senthil Kumar, from the Murthy Immigration Services Private Limited, our India office, who does exclusively or primarily consular issues with over 22 years doing consular matters. Joining us is my other esteemed colleague, Jessica Beaver, from the United States. We will all discuss different issues. As many of you know, there's been a lot of recent changes that have occurred, and so we thought it was perfect and timely for the legal team, the attorney heading the legal operations in India, MurthyIndia.com, to join us for today's discussion. So, Senthil, what are the changes that you have noticed, and what are the criteria that is required to take advantage of what we refer to as the interview waiver program or to use the Dropbox method?
Thank you, Attorney Sheila and Jessica, for this opportunity. So I'm going to talk about the recent changes that came into effect in February of this year without any prior announcement. So in most circumstances, when somebody is applying for a non-immigrant visa, they are required to complete a biometric, and then they are also required to appear in person before a consular officer for a visa interview. And there are some exceptions to it. Applicants less than 14 and over 80 are exempted from this process. That's called the. And in addition to that, if you are renewing the visa, if certain conditions are met, then you qualify for the interview waiver program or the drop-off. So I'm going to talk about the current requirements after the new changes have come into place, and this is applicable globally, just not just to India. So to qualify for the Dropbox, the applicant should be applying for the same type of visa that they previously held. So in addition to that, this must have been issued in the same country that you're applying for the Dropbox. And it should be usually the primary residence that you are, place of residence that you had. Probably if you're living in the U.S., then that should probably be in the last country you resided in. And visa that was previously issued should have been issued after your 14th birthday. So if you make all the other criteria is met, but then if the prior visa was issued before the 14th birthday, then you still will have to appear for a personal interview. And another important criteria is that after the visa was approved, it should not have been canceled, revoked, or even the CWOP stamp should not have been placed. And you should not have lost, your passport, because if your passport has been lost and you have only a copy of the passport, then you would not qualify for the Dropbox, renewal of the visa. And it should not be any prior refusal after the visa issuance. So if you had a prior visa refusal, then that should have been followed by a visa issuance. So if that is the case, you still qualify for the Dropbox. And if you're applying for a J visa, the DS-2019 should be issued by the same institute that, based on which the previous visa was approved by you. So apart from this, if you're a Republic of China, national of Republic of China or Nigeria, you're not eligible for F, M, and J waiver criteria. So this is something, and the most recent visa should either be valid or should have expired within the last 12 months. Only then you would qualify for the Dropbox, renewals in India.
Great. Thank you so much, Senthil, for that overview. Absolutely. I think that was, like you said, quite a surprise for all of us when that occurred, with very little to no notice and suddenly switching it from 48 months or 4 years to 1 year, because a lot of people who had traveled were now stuck and now told that they need to attend these in-person mandatory interviews with no advance notice. Very distressing. That's on true. Many levels. Also, I think it's not, the interview waiver is not available for blanket L1 petition holders, But other than that, I think that a lot of the criteria that we just discussed would apply. Now, it obviously changes. The requirements change depending on the consular post. So, Jessica, maybe you could just share some of the highlights of the eligibility requirements.
Sure, Sheila. So, like you mentioned, these requirements can vary from post to post. In India, for example, a prior visa refusal only prevents an individual from being eligible if the refusal occurred after the applicant's most recent visa issuance. However, if we look at a post like in China, they do not allow L1 visa applicants to use this drop box. And many consular posts do not grant this interview waiver if the applicant's prior visa was issued, as Cynthil mentioned, before the applicant's 14th birthday. And as Cynthil mentioned before, there are ages they look at. A visa applicant under the age of 14 or older than 79 generally are exempt from the interview requirements. And the interview requirements also may be waived for anyone who is applying for a diplomatic, NATO, or international organization visa. A really important note that comes up for children under 14 is if they are trying to get that B1, B2 visitor visa, children under 14 have to submit photocopies of both parents' passports, biographic information, and that valid U.S. visa page, whereas all other classes except that B1, B2 visa, they only have to submit one or the other parent's biographic information and valid visa page. So that is something that's very important to note for those children under 14. And as Cynthil mentioned before, interview waiver is discretionary. You always should be prepared that you could get called into, you know, a consulate interview, and making sure that you have all of these documents that we're going to speak about a little bit later, and be prepared if you are not eligible for the Dropbox. And when you do go to the Dropbox, you are able to go to any VAC or document collection site. Sheila, when we're talking about the Dropbox, I was alluding to some of those documents that you might need to bring. What should someone bring, you know, for a Dropbox appointment?
So the documents that are generally required, as some of you may be aware, is obviously the appointment, the visa appointment letter issued by the consulate for the date and time, the DS-160 confirmation page, your current passport, and if you have a prior passport, your old passport, a photograph meeting the specifications as required for the visa, and the I-20 or the I-797, if it's H-1B or L-1 petition, the I-20 if it's a school, the invitation letter if it's a B-1, B-2, or what have you. Of course, if it's H-4, then you need to prove the relationship with your principal spouses on H-1B, so maybe the marriage documents, which confirm the validity and the bona fides of the marriage, like marriage certificate, and the birth certificate, especially for children if they're applying for the H-4. So basically all information and documents that prove that you have the eligibility for the particular visa classification that you are seeking to get the visa stamp for. Now, one of the questions we're always asked is, hey, do I actually need to visit the Dropbox Center? And the answer is no. You do not have to go physically. Like at one point, I think it was mandatory. Now any representative can drop off the application and the supporting documents. A letter of authorization is not required, but it is always helpful and practical and prudent to have that letter of authorization with you. And with respect to dropping off the documents, what happens next, Cynthil?
Yeah, before I get into that, I wanted to just add something to what Jessica said. Children below 14 are applying for the Dropbox, right? We need to, if they're applying for a B1, B2, we need to include a copy of the visa of both parents. But there have been instances where one of the parents is no more. I mean, if he was dead and gone, or they would have gone through a divorce. So in those cases, we have included the death certificate of the parent who's no more, and in situations where they've gone through a divorce, then we submit the divorce document along with the child custody document. And in some instances, when the divorce is still going on, we are able to get this with a letter from the other parent, a biological parent, saying that they do not have any objection in the other person taking this person to the child to the U.S. So that is something which I thought I would add to what Jessica said.
Sure, sure. And in fact, I know that there's sometimes one parent will abandon the family or just abscond and be gone or vanish from their lives. So then you need sworn affidavits, proving that or showing it. So it's very similar where generally, of course, the rule is always the rule, but there are always exceptions to the rule based on certain circumstances. Good point.
Thank you. You're welcome. So once you drop the documents, what happens is, depending upon where you drop the documents, if the consular, you don't have to drop the documents at the same consular post where you have the interview. For example, if your interview is happening in Delhi, you don't have to go to the Dropbox in Delhi to drop it off. You can drop it off at any of the document collection center or the visa application center nearest to you. And it takes about 3-4 business days for the application to reach the consulate. So once it reaches, the status of the application will change to application received. And as and when the consular officer reviews any of the file relating to your application, the date will keep changing. And if everything is met, one can expect the visa to be approved. And after approval, within a few days, it changes to issued. And also, if there is something the consular officer needs from the applicant, then they will issue a 221G and the status changes to refused. And you get an email or a letter along with a passport with the instructions on what has to be done. So they may be asked to appear for a personal interview, or they may be asked to submit some additional documentation, depending upon, the situation. And some instances where then additional administrative process is required. The case, if they want to do a security advisory opinion, then they'll have to, in this case, there is changes to admin processing, and after a few days, it changes back to approved and then issued.
Okay. Thank you, Santil.
Sheila, I was just going to reiterate what Simple said about those case status changes on the CEAC website. Being that application is received with the date, just because they're not always updated in real time. I know people sort of panic that it's not updated always in real time. You can get the approval, you can get the visa issued, refused, the 221G, or even under administrative processing. But Sheila, how long do we think the process for this visa waiver program is expected to take?
So on average, one can expect it to take approximately 3 to 5 weeks. Note that if a person has submitted the documents prior to the change to 12 months, you may now have to attend the interview at the consulate and no longer take advantage of the Dropbox method, right? The document delivery cost in India has recently changed from rupees 850 to 1200 rupees because of the continued increase of the US dollar's value against the Indian rupee. Now you have the visa interviews at the consulate. So I guess the next question that we're often asked is, hey, what if I'm no longer eligible for the Dropbox or not eligible at all? So now I need to make this appointment at the consulate, and what's the process? Santil?
Oh, yeah. So the first step is to complete the visa application form DS-160. The Consular Electronic Application Center, CAC.state.gov. That is the website we go to complete the visa application form. And you'll get a 10-digit code. It's a CAC bar code, which you will need, to create a profile on usvisascheduling.com. So currently, India and most Asian countries, the visa appointment scheduling is done through a website called usvisascheduling.com. And, for other countries, you can visit ustraveldocs.com and then choose the current, your country, and you will be directed to the visa application center for the relevant country. And once an account is created on usvisascheduling.com for India and other countries which follow this, you'll have to enter the profile information, passport information, and pay the applicable visa application fee. And after the fee is activated, it usually takes about a day for the fee to be activated. One can schedule an appointment at the consulate. And usually, if it is a Dropbox, it's just one appointment. If it is an in-person interview, you will have two appointments. One is for the biometrics, and the second one is for the actual visa interview. And there are some countries like the Indonesia and Thailand where both the biometrics and the interview happen at one go. You know, you don't have two appointments at the one appointment with the consulate. The biometrics is also taken at the same time. So in high volume countries, you know, they have a biometric appointment separately from the personal appointment. And the interview wait times are ridiculously long for B1, B2 visas. Right now, you know, after the change in the administration, there are no dates that are available at all for a while. On and off, we still see one or two dates available, but then the interview wait times earlier used to be in April or May of next year, 2026, but off late we've been stopped seeing that. So that is, you know, the situation with it. But student visas, almost always interview dates are available. And for other H and L visas as well, the dates are available within a few weeks.
Great. Thank you very much, Santil, for that update. And what are the sorts of issues that one needs to generally be aware of when completing the DS-160? Jessica, do you want to jump in briefly?
Sure. So any prior visa refusal must be disclosed. And that also includes if you've got a 221G. A lot of people think that if they got a 221G, that's not a visa refusal, but that is something you have to disclose. You also have to disclose any prior arrest or conviction. We just sort of note that if you're having a criminal issue that's ongoing, it's not a good idea to travel because the consulate will want sort of the final disposition of what's happening. So you might want to wait until that issue is over. And a reminder that although a state may allow marijuana use, the federal government does not. And so it is considered a federal violation if you know, do partake, and this can affect you getting a non-immigrant visa and can affect your green card as well. The U.S. government can use anything on this visa application to compare to any other documentation you submit in your lifetime that could even come up 15 years later on your green card application. So it's very critical that you complete this DS-160 truthfully and accurately because it could come back many years later to bring up issues that you may or may not have disclosed. And especially when we're talking about violating your status or being unlawfully present, it is something that you would absolutely want to make sure you disclose. And one of the good things is that our team at Murthy India routinely helps people with the DS-160 and getting prepared for these interviews to make sure that you have the full picture, that you are absolutely answering everything, you know, accurately and correctly. And in addition to this DS-160, you also have other documents that you need to take for the consulate. Sheila, what other documents would you need to take with you to your in-person consular interview?
Sure. Okay, great. Thank you. And you're so right about the marijuana issue. That's the most common issue that we hear all the time where when I do consultations with clients, they'll say I used it or it was medical use. My doctor recommended it. My therapist recommended it because, you know, Washington State, for example, and now so many states make it 100% legal, but it's not just a violation of federal law. It's actually a criminal violation, and it's a ground of inadmissibility, which is pretty much a lifetime bar. You can't enter if you ever used it. I know that the Biden administration and if Harris had won, she had said she was going to change it federally, but right now there's no change. If you heard it on TV and you're confused, please understand there's absolutely no change in the law. And so that's a big problem. That is a permanent ground of ineligibility unless you're eligible. And there is no actually waiver for the use, for consumption. Only 30 grams or less of possession of marijuana is an exception, but that's a different discussion for another day. So jumping into the kinds of documents that you require, obviously, if you're applying for an H-1 visa, you need the H-1 petition approval, the form I-129, any supplemental forms attached to it, the LCA, which shows posting and posting information and compliance with the DOL requirements, the company's letter or the petitioner letter outlining the job duties, and all of that. And I always tell applicants, please read it. Don't just submit it because a consular officer may have read it. They will ask you questions about it. And don't just say, here it is, read it, because they have less than a minute or two to give you a decision. And they will skim through it. And if they find that there's a mismatch in anything that is in on those doc pages or documents and what you tell them, that's going to be a denial of your visa, right? You need supporting documents with the company letter. If you had an RFE, submit the RFE, the response, because a lot of times the same issues concern and trouble the consular officer as they concern and trouble the USCIS in issuing the RFE. Of course, you need to show your passport is valid for at least 6 months. And current visa processing fees, which we told you keep changing because of the fluctuation in currencies across the world, two passport style photos, letter from your company rep, maybe confirming the employment, the salary position date, et cetera, especially if the approval was from several months ago, and they don't know if the job offer is still available. Of course, if you've been working with the same employer, you need to show pay stubs to show that you had maintained your status, and the W-2 for the duration of the employment, right? So you have a bunch of documents. Again, remember, it's all very practical and connected with, if you were the visa officer, what would you need in order to issue the visa to the individual? So what are the additional documents until that somebody needs to submit, if you're especially in the IT consulting company business?
Yeah, that's a good question, Nishila, because most often, you know, when we have an IT consulting company filing the petition, then it becomes a challenge under certain circumstances. So if the project was with end client and the beneficiary will be placed at the end client, then it's always important to carry a letter from the end client confirming the position and the person is going to be working there at their location or whichever location it is, and it should be matching with the LCA. And if there is a vendor involved, it's also good to include a letter from the vendor. And usually with these two documents, the consulates process the visa, but there have been some instances where they also ask for a copy of the contract and the statement of work for that specific employee. In recent times, if we have a letter from the client and the vendor, that usually does the trick. Many times, and also if it's an IT consulting company, and if they say they're going to place the beneficiary on an internal project, almost always the case is placed on an admin processing 221G refusal is given, and they say that we need more time to review your case, and they reach out to the employer to find out whether that project is really on. Sometimes there's a site visit to see if there's enough space for the beneficiary to come and work there. And even in instances where the client letter and vendor letters have been provided, they almost always reach out to the client or the vendor, and only after a confirmation from them, the visa is issued. So this is something which we've been seeing, not just with the current administration, this has been there even with the previous administration as well. And so with the new regulation that came in on January, with respect to the requirements for inclined projects, I think this is going to become even more common moving forward. And another important thing I thought I should just touch upon is when somebody completes, Jessica said, and you also talked about the importance of completing the visa application form DS-160, right? So what if you had completed the visa application form and then there is some subsequent change? Because it is important to make sure that you present all accurate information to the officer at the time of interview. So let's look at different scenarios, and I'll tell you what can be done, each of those scenarios, because if you are an applicant and then if you are in this situation, it would help you to fix any error that might have been there on the DS-160. So let's assume that you're applying in person for an interview and you have completed the DS-160 schedule and appointment. And even before the biometrics, you realize that there is some change which you need to update on the DS-160. So there is no way to go back and edit the DS-160. So one has to recreate the DS-160 application form, make all the necessary corrections, and carry both the old DS-160 confirmation page and the new one for the biometrics, and request the staff at the VAC to update it with a new DS-160. So it's a very simple, straightforward process. The staff are familiar with this, and they will almost always update it for you without any hassles. And what happens is when you go for the interview, the new CAC would be taken into consideration, but you should carry both old and new. And in the second scenario, where you have completed your biometrics and then you are yet to appear for the personal interview and you realize that some critical information has to be updated or some information has changed from the time you submitted the biometrics, then you can again create the new DS-160 form. And in addition to the confirmation page, you should carry one photograph, matching the requirements, set forth in the consular website. Time of appearing for a personal interview, you should request them to consider the new application form. There have been instances where they have asked what changes are there and opened the previous form and made those changes on their end, or they have accepted the new DS-160 along with the photograph. You're submitting the new DS-160 after the biometrics is done, that is why you need the photograph, in these instances. And if it's a Dropbox appointment, before the Dropbox appointment, you can complete the new DS-160, and at the time of submitting the documents, you can have both the old and new DS-160 submitted so that you have accurate information submitted to the consular officer.
Great. Thank you so much, Senthil. As you can see, Senthil Kumar and his team in Chennai, which also serve Mumbai, Hyderabad, Delhi, Kolkata posts, and all the consular posts actually, not just in India, but in the Far East as well, in other Asian countries, in Australia, New Zealand, they're available. They literally live, eat, and breathe all of these DS-160 issues, the visa issuance. And so besides the team at Murthy.com, the Murthy law firm, you have the MurthyIndia.com, Murthy Immigration Services Private Limited, that can not just help you with the DS-160 form, but do mock interviews, prepare you, talk to you maybe in local languages that you or your relatives or family is comfortable in time, not having to wake up middle of the night to do a discussion since you're in the same time zone in India. So please feel free to take advantage of the wonderful, comprehensive services that between the U.S. team and the India liaison office we are able to provide to ensure that you, your family, your employees, your coworkers have the best visa representation in the world with the incredibly knowledgeable and diligent team, both in the U.S. and in India. And we always tell people as a parting reminder, when you enter the U.S., always double check or check your I-94 card date because it's no longer issued in person like the olden days, but you actually need to check online on the CBP website to ensure that you don't have a shortened or truncated date because of the passport or sometimes just an error based on the visa or what have you. With that, on behalf of Senthil Kumar, Jessica Beaver, myself, Sheila Murthy, and the entire Murthy Law Firm team and the Murthy Immigration Services Private Limited or Murthy India team, we want to thank you for joining us. We know that if you ever have any visa issues, questions, thoughts, discussion, consultation, or need support, you will come to the best legal team in the world. Thank you so much for the privilege of helping you. Have a great rest of your day. Take care.
This is a free service. The content is the protected, copyrighted property of the Murthy Law Firm. Unauthorized recording or dissemination of these materials without prior permission is prohibited by law. Learn about our firm, how to engage our services, and more at www.murthy.com.